She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
Just crush my skull with your thighs, would you please?
I would write sex scenes at Starbucks.
Ooh, baby, ooh, baby.
What does she do? Pogo stick on it?
She was a porn star.
Luke Skycocker.
With our new friend.
We have a new friend, a new guest. We have Amy Award with us.
Hi!
Hi! Amy is the author of the Kingmans series, right? The S is at the end.
S is at the end.
The S is at the end. And the number of times that I said it incorrectly, I was like, I'm going to get it right for the episode. And the first book in that series is The Cock Down the Block,
yep.
Which... Mm-hmm. What drew me to you were these titles, because we follow each other on TikTok,
yeah,
and I started seeing you post the things like, this is the title they won't let you, you know, see.
Yeah.
So I was telling somebody at dinner on Sunday, after church, by the way, after church, I'm like, hey, so I'm interviewing this author who wrote The Cock Down the Block. And my 11-year-old, almost 12-year-old son looked at me. Like, I was like, it's a rooster, son.
Cock and then I looked
at my friend across the table and I was like, it's not a rooster. Like, but it is.
There is a rooster. There legitimately is a rooster.
Legitimately is a rooster.
It's hilarious you bring this up, April. My Irish bestie, my bestie in Ireland, her youngest, her son, he's recently joined Goodreads. And part of his, like, he's like the evil genius of our family. Mm-hmm. And he told his mom, I'm no longer on the Council of Villains because of the title of this book. Because what kind of supervillain reads something this smutty?
And the best supervillains. The best ones.
She goes, he's definitely judging you. And I go, you tell Charlie that the reason he was able to stay a supervillain as long as he was is because I encouraged the villainness all through elementary school.
Okay, so, but
ignore Aunt Molly's reading.
But the rooster also has a fun name. Would you like to share with the class?
Okay, so listen. I wish I could have chickens, but I cannot because I live in a teeny tiny apartment. So
Matthew Biggs, we're looking
I have definitely, you know how people like... pick out names for their kids when they're in like elementary school or whatever. Mm-hmm. I definitely have always had names for chickens that I can never ever have. And so I also am a fan of Star Wars and Star Trek.
Yeah, no way.
And Firefly and all of the things. I'm a huge sci-fi nerd. And so that's I got true. To pick the best chicken names, and our rooster's name is Luke Skycocker. It's never not funny.
So I actually read this book in January as part of a buddy read with our other bestie who's frequently on here. Her name is Nurse Katie. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't started it, and she had, and she texted me, Luke Skycocker. And that's all it said. And I was like, I am going to need context.
And Katie's our resident chicken lady too. Yes, so like as soon she loves a good chicken bun. So like you got her as soon as you did it.
The chicken names be chicken. I love the chicken names. This all started because I have a good friend who has chickens and she was getting a new hen. And I was like, oh my God, you have to name your new hen Kylo Hen. And she's like, no. She named it something dumb like Betty or something, you know? And I'm like, no! And so thus...
What a waste of a chicken name!
I know! So, thus the rest of the hens were born.
Mm. I don't know.
But I love a good pun. I love a good dick joke, too. I'm a big fan of the dick jokes.
So. We love a good dick joke. I will say, though, we love the appreciation for the sci-fi nation. Mm-hmm. We're here for it. Not a lot of women. Fun. Not a lot of women are represented in sci-fi, so it's a win for us.
Yeah. So I'm going to go through your author bio, if that's okay, and then we'll do a synopsis as well, because why not? So Amy Award is a curvy girl who has a thing for football players, fuzzy butt pets, and spicy romance novels. She believes that all bodies are beautiful and deserve their own love stories with happily ever afters. And you can find her at amyaward.com, and I will put that back in down below in the doobly doos as well. Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of this plus size main character genre.
Yeah.
And I had never been exposed to it until Olivia Dade. That was the first one I had read. And we read Olivia, spoiler alert. Gosh, that was like the third season. And she actually came on our podcast last season.
She's
incredible. She's incredible.
I'm not going to lie.
And it was eye-opening for me. It was like an awakening because I was getting really tired. I love romance. It's my favorite genre. Romance and romanticy, they're my favorite. And I was getting really tired of reading about these 20-year-old stick, skinny, tiny, 5-foot tall women and these monster sized men. And as Molly said, like, what does she do? Pogo stick on it? Like, come on. And it's like, probably. She's tiny. No,
well, they split fucking in half is what's going to happen. As Nicki Minaj says, fuck them skinny bitches in the club.
I mean, so, the skinny bitches need some love too, but
they get
a lot of love already.
Fuck them skinny bitches.
Yeah.
We've been listening to a lot of hip hop lately. Sorry.
It's not that those body types don't exist. It's just that they're the only type body types that really get attention. And I really enjoy reading a character. I mean, first of all, Trixie is also a librarian. She's a teen librarian. I'm a children's librarian. So I was like, huh? Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
I thought that was hilarious.
Listen, I'm telling you, when they talk about naughty librarians and, you know, that's like a whole like fetish and whatever. We're all horny ass motherfuckers in the library. Okay.
Yeah.
We were all repressed nerdy people when we were kids and probably all into our 20s. All we did was read and be nerdy. And now we just, we be fucking.
Read nerdy smutty.
Or you're writing
books. We read nerdy smutty books. Exactly.
Speaking, I mean, if anybody reads nerdy smutty books, I'd say, well, their editor there, Mr. Tom.
Indeed.
He really does. My husband, gosh, his books are
the sci-fi ones are crack me up.
We share an audiobook app and he'll like pre-warn me, like, you can't read these ones. Because they're like RPG, but also
what
about
the bunny one? What was the bunny one a couple years ago? The space bunnies?
I'm still traumatized by it. They were like women bodies but bunny heads. Nice. And I was like,
they think we're smutty.
He has no problem.
I'm not even getting started. Book talk.
He has no problem with what I read. He encourages it. Good. So anyway, all right. Synopsis for the book. Okay, so we read The Cock Down the Block, and I don't have a physical copy of this. It's on my Kindle, but you can see the design behind Amy there. You can see the cover is gorgeous.
I have one.
Oh, it's so pretty.
This is my favorite.
That one's bedazzled.
Yes. My niece made this for me for Christmas with the bedazzling.
Gorgeous.
I did the audiobook, and let me tell you, they did a good job.
I know. Delicious. The audio is delicious.
It's on the Hoopla app for my library, so I should listen to it, but I've already downloaded the rest of the series on my Kindle, so
might as well just keep going.
You know, Amy, it is funny, though. I will say this, and Molly already knows this, but I don't read on my Kindle. It's not something I do. Mm-hmm. I have a Kindle. I have a first-generation Paperwhite that is the same age as my son because I got it right after I had him. Okay. And because I don't have Kindle Unlimited. I don't have that. So I'm literally paying for each book that goes on there.
No.
But recently, I have discovered a few indie authors, and that's how I can get their books. And our friend Emma Berry is one of those authors as well. And you know, like, so the Kindle has been up, and also I read at work at my desk on the Kindle app online.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, synopsis.
Okay,
yeah. We've tried this three times.
Respectfully, fuck you. Trixie and Chris have been friends since childhood. Trixie is literally the girl next door. Chris, NFL Super Bowl winning quarterback, has pretty much been in love with her for years. But she shot him down in high school, and he's fine with her boundaries, really.
Mostly. He's totally fine with it.
Totally fine with it. Trixie is a plus-size, sexy-as-hell teen librarian who has had a difficult road with relationships. So when the mean girls from her high school come back into her life, she lies about having a boyfriend, more specifically, Chris, as her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Seizing the opportunity to finally have the girl of his dreams, Chris sweeps in to save the day. Unfortunately, not everyone agrees with the match, so let's dive in and talk about it.
Good times.
Yes. It really is. The book is very funny, and the spice is chef's kiss.
I love
it. So good.
I don't praise books unless they have the good banter, and the banter.
Yes. I tried real hard.
You know, I saw a TikTok, I think I reshared it, where somebody was talking about how when people complain, it was like an audio track of somebody's audiobook about complete people talking about how smutty books, they're just sex and all that. And this was like the banter leading up to it. And here's the thing. That's what I want.
Yeah.
There is a certain romance author. I won't say her name here, but Molly knows who I'm talking about. There's a certain romance author that every single time that I read her, and I've read multiple books by her, so I continue to read her.
Yeah.
I know I am not going to like her banter, and I don't like her books because of that. Now, why do I keep reading them? Because sometimes you need a palate cleanser, and I know what I'm going to get from her.
Because you're a glutton for punishment.
Well, that too. But yeah, I mean, I'm here for the banter. Write good banter, and it doesn't even matter to me if you're closed door. I mean, I'd prefer that you're not, but I want the banter.
No, I mean, I'm personally a fan of banter when I read, so
yeah,
like, sometimes I'll write it and I'll be like, but is that funny enough? Really, at the end of the day, I write for me. Like, if I think it's funny, then I just hope everybody else thinks I'm funny. But if I think it's funny, usually I'm on the right path. It's when I when I write it and I'm like, that's not very funny. Then I know I'm off track, because it's my sense of humor that I'm fighting for at the end of the day.
Right.
Like, there are a ton of inside jokes with myself in the books.
That is 100%
me. I'm here for that.
There's 100% me. There are so many times I've gone to I've created an inside joke in my head, and I'm like, okay, this isn't a book. You'll know about it.
Yes. Like, if and other people think my inside jokes with myself are funny, like, I never know unless somebody, like, messages me. And every once in a while, like, I did, because this is set in Denver and I live in the Denver metro area, I did lots of little punny inside jokes with the Denver area. And if I get a message from a reader that was like, oh, ha, 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 I thought it was so funny when you said this, I was like, yes! Somebody got my joke!
I love it.
I do too.
We have a lot of inside jokes on Besties, and sometimes when we have guests on, I have to like explain to them things, because Molly will just be like,
Molly going just off. Railroads everyone.
And I'm like, she has they a don't know about what it. We're talking about. All right, so let's get to the questions.
All right,
all right. The Cock Down the Block is your first book in the Cocky Kingman series.
Yeah.
What inspired you to write this series?
There's a lot of factors that came into this. One was, I think football players are one of my favorite hero types, because I love that competition edge to them that they always have.
Yeah.
That is very sexy to me anyway.
And
I grew up, I grew up in the house of Husker. So my mom was a Nebraska Cornhusker, and there's only one thing to do in Nebraska besides watch the corn grow, and that's watch the Nebraska Cornhuskers. So Saturday mornings at my house, we didn't watch cartoons, we watched football. So I grew up with these like football players being like, you know, the stars of the world.
Right.
So I always, always, always wanted to write a football player, but I actually started out writing paranormal romance.
Yeah.
And so it took me a little while to get to the football players. Although my very first book, that I call it the under the bed book, like, you learn how to write and it's not anything that should ever see light. That was also a football player. But then I accidentally turned to dragons and werewolves and whatever. So finally, we got back to football players. So that was
that's a happy accident because dragons and werewolves are pretty like, fucking 0% fantastic.
My dad, like I love my dragons and my werewolves, but I have always, always had this book of my heart being a football player. And obviously, Curvy Girls. Like every book I have ever written has always been Curvy Girls. So yeah. Curvy Girl and a football player. And that really was where the premise started. And my personal favorite trope is friends to lovers. So I basically just put everything that I love so very, very much into this.
Yeah.
I used to work at a library, so I put in all my librarian jokes.
I live in the I knew you did. I could tell. I was like, I wonder, this woman has got to be a librarian or worked in a library. She knows her shit.
Yes.
You write for yourself. Sorry.
Yeah, so I put so much of myself into this book, while not like actually being my actual experiences. I put so much of myself into this book.
Yeah.
This was very much a book of my heart. And then also I wish I had chickens and I don't, sadly. So Trixie gets chickens.
That's okay. I've noticed from, you know, writing, if you write for yourself, it excels. If you're writing for the market, it won't.
This was so much, like, I say that this was a book of my heart, but it was also the book of my readers' hearts because while it was for me, I am my audience. I am the person who wants to read the fluffy rom-coms about girls and sexy football players who have chickens and other funny pets. Like, that's what I want to read. And I know that there's a market for that, so that's what I read.
Right. Yeah. Totally fair. And I feel like I like the representation. I like this family dynamic.
Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of fun.
And honestly, fake dating is one of my favorite tropes, which you get
way up there on my list. I love fake dating. So of course
I love fake dating. Yeah. Now I am not a fan of fake marriage because I feel like that's too much of an investment. I'm not in on that, but fake dating, I love it. And this was a really good like way to do a friends to lovers because I've read fake dating before where they like are in the same circle. But they're not necessarily friends.
Yeah.
What was the book that we read? Wild Love.
Boyfriend Material.
Oh, I thought you were thinking about Wild Love.
No. Boyfriend Material. Cause they were in the same like friend group, but they weren't friends. And then they started fake dating and that was a good one. But I think this is the first one where I've read, like they were truly friends.
Yeah.
And now they, So, okay. So speaking of, Trixie and Chris have been best friends since childhood. And we talk a lot about tropes on the podcast and your book uses two big tropes, friends to lovers and fake dating. Yep. I'm a huge fan of both tropes. So I was wondering, how do you navigate these tropes in your writing?
So when I was doing, I knew I wanted to do friends to lovers because it's one of my favorite tropes, but I struggled just a little bit with the back end of friends to lovers of, because it's almost always one person has always been in love with the other one.
Yeah. Okay,
that's part of the shtick of friends to lovers, and we love that.
Yeah.
But it was always just this teeny tiny bit uncomfortable for me that if they had always been in love with this other person, were they just in it just to get in their pants all along? Was that the relationship? And I didn't want that.
Yes.
And I mean, the
ulterior motives. The ulterior motive
of, are we just friends all of this time just because you just wanted to get in my pants? And that that part I didn't like about friends.
Yeah, and it's like I have a claim on her because I'm her friend.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
isn't what's going on here.
Yeah, that I didn't like those two elements of the friends.
Yeah.
So it actually took me a while when I was conceiving of Chris and Trixie's relationship of, okay, so how is it not going to be that for them?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's when I came up with he did ask her out and she turned him down. And so he had to be okay with that because raised well in a family that understands boundaries and is also feminist positive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So Chris had to be okay with it.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was still there for him. But he was they were genuinely friends.
Right.
He thought he could never be with her.
He kind of occasionally got an erection when he hugged her. Exactly. But they were just friends.
They were really, really friends. He just like
has been pining for her since they were in middle school. It's not a big deal.
it's
totally fine. It's totally fine. It's okay if she'll never love him back. He gets to keep an eye on her.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah. He can still
take care of her if she just lives in her house with random chickens.
Like
that he bought for her so that she didn't have to worry about anything.
I love that he's like, oh, just ask the management company if you could have chickens. You never know what they'll say.
It'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Because that happens all the time in real life.
Like, every HOA allows you to have a rooster right in your backyard.
Chris, listen to me when I say this, good sir. Just because things happen for you as an international football star doesn't mean they happen for everybody else, my guy. My guy.
All right, so one of the things that interests me in your books was the cover featuring a hot as hell plus size woman. And I'm such a fan of books that not only feature fat women, but have the audacity to put them as big women on the cover. What a fucking concept.
It. Yeah.
Because sadly, this isn't always the case. We get women who are really curvy and described as thick in a book, and then she'll be a stick on the cover. Like, just have the balls to put her looking like she looks.
Yeah. Right.
Like, would you consider yourself a part of the fat positive movement? And also, I want to know who did your cover art.
Yeah, so I absolutely do. I think that it's really important for, it's important to me, but I think it's important in our world that everybody gets to feel represented.
Yeah, of course.
And we don't always, especially in media.
Yeah.
And especially if you're fat. You don't get positive representation. You might get some representation, but it's almost always negative.
You're always the funny friend.
Yeah, you're always, it's always the fat funny friend or the villain. Honestly, so many villains are fat people.
The sad girl who's always alone.
Yeah,
and nobody wants to be around.
There's a lot of negative representation, and we need more positive representation because we are people. And the world still is, it struggles with that and is going to continue to struggle with that. So I absolutely do feel like I'm part of that, the movement of fat positivity. But it's hard. So it's taken me 10 years of publishing. So I've been a lot of people think that this was the debut, and I get that because this one really took off and this is a new pen name for me, but I've been publishing books with curvy girls in them for 10 years.
Hot damn woman.
I did not have curvy women on my covers because it's almost impossible. There were no pictures. So a few did come out, and I launched a series about 3 or 4 years ago. I'm bad. What is time? I don't know. 3 or 4 years ago-ish.
Time's a construct. We're fine.
Right.
Wibbly wobbly.
I launched a series that had a really gorgeous plus size woman on the cover, and they didn't sell. And I ended up changing the covers to sexy man because honestly, most of my paranormals have sexy man chest on them anyway, so it fit the brand. But I was so excited when I first bought those covers because it was like, yes, I can put a curvy girl on the cover. We're ready. We weren't ready.
Really frustrating as an author.
It was really, really frustrating. And there's a lot of calls from people to put actual plus size women on covers.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to do that, but I also want to be able to make money with my books.
Yeah.
100%.
That you have to choose one or the other. Yeah.
So I was really worried before I launched this that whether it would be accepted or not. And there's also that itsy bitsy teeny tiny bit of frustration that pictures, actual photographs of a plus size woman isn't acceptable, but a drawing
is.
And so, I mean, for me, I guess that's baby steps because all of the women on my covers are legitimately plus size. Like the wiener across the way is one of my favorite ones because that ass. I mean, I'm going to just show you because that ass.
That ass.
Look at that ass.
Yeah.
Look at that ass.
Yeah.
Look at that ass.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love Brown. It. I love it. So I was worried beforehand, but it was important to me to have a plus size woman on the cover. So I got the best cover designer that I possibly could. And it's the same as Olivia's first series. It's Lenny Kaufman. So Lenny's doing the whole Kingman series for me. Save I did a Christmas novella that was a surprise for everybody. And Lenny can't do last minute surprises because she's booked out for years. So I had somebody else draw that one. But Lenny's doing the whole Kingman series for me. And I can't wait.
Her
ever.
Her work is fantastic. She Beautiful. Draws an incredible cover art for rom-coms or in romance yeah. books in general. And when I saw your cover, I was like, wow, this kind of looks like, and well, it wasn't Olivia, just Olivia. Like thought. I've got a few other authors. I was like, it looks like that. And I happened to be on her website a yeah. few months ago and I was like, oh shit, it really is the same artist.
It sure is.
I want to backtrack to something you said yeah. about yeah. how you had to change the covers. Mm-hmm. How that must have been so frustrating.
It was. You were not it was really changing frustrating.
An inch of your content. You are not changing a single structure of your interior. You're literally just abiding to the sales,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You had to transform and change not just you, but your beliefs yeah. in a way.
Yeah.
And that is, that's a punch in the stomach as an yeah. author. That's a punch in the And that's and we all just want to be able to pay our bills with our writing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
that's the goal.
Not me. Not I don't want to be a writer. But more power to both of you. That's not for me. I just want to read books.
Yeah. No, it was really hard. And it actually put me into a funk for a while. Yeah.
Understandably so.
I have a newsletter that they get, previews and things like that. And I have a Patreon and they get all of my news and all of my information. And I had to write to them and say, this is a really sad thing that is happening, but here's yeah, the new yeah. covers. Because this is my full-time job. I don't have another job. This is how I pay my rent, yeah. pay my cats. This is how I live my life. And right. so
and I'm sure
it's really important to me to take the steps for positive body representation, but at the yeah. same time, I have to pay my bills.
Yeah. And that's gotta be frustrating. Was that a you decision or was it somebody higher up in the process was like, hey, me?
No, at the end of the day, it was me. So I have a group, I call it a mastermind group, and it's just other authors mm-hmm. that are about the same level of me. And we were talking about the launch of this series and how it just wasn't doing what I expected it to do or anybody expected yeah. it to do. Because I was a very well-established paranormal romance author when I launched that series. And the first book, fine, because it's a new yeah. series. It's okay that it doesn't meet all of the expectations because people are waiting for the other books to come out. Fine, right, fine. Right. I was fine that the first book didn't meet expectations. But when the second, third, and fourth didn't either, it was very disheartening. I almost didn't want to finish writing the series, even though it was a cliffhanger.
Understandable.
And I would never do that to my readers. But also, I almost didn't want to finish writing it because it wasn't selling. Yeah. And we examined everything. We're like, wait, was it to market? Did you hit the tropes right? Did you market it well? And I did all of the things. I did yeah. all of the things. It was a super, of super course. To market at the time, but it was also very, very much me. It was a part of the giant paranormal world that I had written. And at the end of the day, and nobody wanted to say it, but at the end of the day, it was the covers.
Well, that's and brave of you.
The covers were super to market also. They were exactly what everybody else's cover who was writing this genre was making.
Right.
Except I had a fat woman on the cover and everybody else had skinny minis on the cover.
Mm. I don't know if my ego could do that.
It was really hard. And
I'm certain it was.
Yeah.
I would bet money. And I don't know you very well, but I'm going to do something I do with my friends. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You stuck up for yourself. You held on to yourself. You stayed true to yourself. And that was a little blip in the road. And that yeah, fucking yeah. sucks.
Yeah, it was really hard. It actually put me in a funk for a while. And I have a really, really great success coach.
And I'm just sticking into it. So, and sorry.
We had to talk. No, it's fine. It's fine. Because I actually think it's an important part of the success of the Cocky Kingmans. Because yeah. I had been through that once before. And I knew, because Lenny's covers are some of the most expensive covers out there. And so I put a pretty penny into it, betting that I could make mm-hmm. it sell. I had no idea it would end up doing what it did. But I had been through once before, mm-hmm. if you can't sell a Curvy Girl, you can get a different cover. I knew that yeah. I could do that.
Yeah,
it would make me mad, but I knew that I could do it at the end of the day. And the yeah. way that the book world, the romance book world, has embraced this series and the Curvy Girls has mm-hmm. definitely healed parts of me, including yeah, that good. Little bit of I had to change that series, that old series. I had to change the covers to Manchester instead of Curvy Girls.
And so I feel like
that part of it's been phenomenal.
I feel like, so not everything about social media is great. I mean, some of it's quite toxic, but I will say, like, the book talk community, for the most part, they want inclusivity. They want everyone to feel like they belong to the book club.
Yeah.
And I see women who are very skinny who are coming on and talking about why representation of curvy characters, not just women, but men, is important. And I'm like, they get it. Like, they get it, you know? Yeah. So I just think every body type exists. We know that. So we can't just be, oh, there's a kitty cat.
Welcome. We can't,
hello. We can't be representing one type of person. And actually, when I was teaching, because I was an English teacher, I'm a librarian now, not a school librarian. I'm a public librarian. I feel like I need to differentiate because I know you know the libraries. So they're not the same. They're not the same. When I was an English teacher, my department head was retiring, and she's an African-American woman. And we had this idea that we were going to buy her books. Like, we're English teachers. We're all going to get her a book. So one of my coworkers decided that she was going to get, like, romance books. And this is not what this woman would read. She's very, like, I don't know. She's demure, dignified. And that's the only way I can think to describe her. I mean, like, she's just so meticulous. It's just, so she couldn't find any romance novels with Black people on the cover. And that's our and our good friend Nikki Payne has talked about this as a woman who is writing Black women in romances, and how that representation, it's coming again, it's like happening now, but how it's so slow to get to the market.
So slow.
And I think what is helping is social media, and also with there being so many indie authors that are representing all types of bodies and all types of people of color, queer, straight. I discovered that I like MMF romance from an indie author. And yeah, I mean, I think that's really helping people see sexuality as human and not necessarily as this one defined what Harlequin romance my grandmother used to read. Not that there's anything
red
wrong
books.
With those.
No,
those,
the red book in the grocery store.
They were also delicious. I have a whole collection in the other room of old Harlequins in Rainbow Order. They're beautiful. I mean, each step along the way in romance very much speaks to the history of specifically American feminism of going on in women's lives when when what was happening in romance novels. The bodice rippers of the 70s, so much of it was because women were getting more control over their sexuality and didn't necessarily know what to do with that. But if a man ripped it from you, that was okay. So thus we got bodice rippers.
And what, again, I'm going to say this again, because I think it's important. People aren't reading these romance novels purely for the sex. I mean, it is really nice to read a good spicy scene, but we're reading it because it's empowering. It's empowering to see someone like you be the object of desire. You know? And whatever that is that you look like, maybe you are skinny, maybe you're Black, maybe you're plus size, whatever it is, maybe you're non-binary. We've read non-binary characters before too. And like, just to see yourself represented as sexy and desirable, it's so empowering.
It's 100% why I started writing plus size novels in the first place. Because when I started writing about 15-ish years ago, there were a few plus size novels out there, but not very many. Like, I can remember the first handful that I read, and almost always, even in a romance novel, the women were not necessarily seen as a sexual being.
It's like a fetish in a lot of ways.
So many out there that it's a fetish, or they had to lose weight first to get to their happy ever after. And I didn't want that. So I started writing books with women like me, but
yeah,
more that were actual sexual beings. And that was really important to me in the brand to be able to have that. Because at the time, I only knew one other author who only wrote, and this was 10 years ago when I first started publishing, I only knew one other author that wrote plus size women exclusively. Like there were everybody, there's a lot of authors who have a one-off here and there, but exclusively it was me and Millie Taden back in the day. And I actually haven't read a Millie book in a while. Don't tell Millie.
Shh, Millie,
but,
don't
wait. It'll be our secret.
Right. But I don't know.
And all of our viewers here.
Yeah. And now the whole world knows. While I hope everyone listens.
JK to Millie, podcast. She's been reading. That's what she's been doing this whole time, that's Millie. She's not actually talking to us. She's been reading you.
But there just weren't that many women who were writing romance exclusively for plus size. Yeah. And so there just never has been very many. There has been a trend in probably, I'm going to say, about the past 4-ish years. Again, what is time? I don't know. And I do think Olivia helped start that again with the success of Spoiler Alert, where there are actually more authors now. I have a whole friend group now who all write plus size women exclusively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we read another one during Warm Winter Bitches during our pod break.
What
was that called?
She was a porn star.
Yeah, the porn star series.
Fuck me. What was that?
Merry Little Meet Cute.
Oh, wait. Sierra Simone and Julie Murphy.
Yes.
They write cute. Great plus size representation.
It was super cute.
Well, I had read, what is it, Puddin'? Is that the YA novel by her? I had read that, and so I was excited to read it. I wanted the sex to go there more in that one, but I thought the representation was really good. All right. So Chris talks a lot in his book about how he has been raised surrounded by big women. Trixie finds herself surrounded by plus size bodies when she meets the cowgirls. What were you trying to convey to the reader with this acknowledgement?
So much of the people who exist in our lives are not thin people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just look around the world a little bit, there is body diversity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not just because Americans are fat either. Right. Yes. There are big people in every country.
Seriously. There is body diversity, but it's never in media. Like you would expect. Right. When I was first writing Cock Down the Block, I started watching this old TV show on Netflix that's about a girl and her man, and he gets a job with a fictional football team. He's in med school, but part of him being on the team, she's expected to be a part of the women's group that are the wives and the girlfriends of
the wives club
players. And when she goes to these meetings, they're all little skinny mini girls, and I'm like, but that's not real life. And that is not what I think we need to see better representation. So once again, it was just about, there are actually fat people in the world, so they need to be represented in the media as well. So on Trixie's side of seeing all different people being represented that were her size, I think it was the same for Trixie as it is for us when it's the first time we read a plus size romance novel. We're like, oh wait, there are other happy fat people in the world.
Yeah, crazy. Exactly. And what people realize
is experience joy.
What people don't realize is that your weight isn't proportionate to your health either. Mm-hmm. Like nobody complains about 300 pound football players being unhealthy.
Yeah.
Like they are athletes.
Yeah. I'm sure out of the three
you
of
see
us,
you Lizzo like on stage playing her flute and like
Lizzo is a freaking vegan who exercises 4+ hours a day.
Her body is banging. Like, she is sexy.
Also, no offense, I'm smaller than both of you, and I have the shittiest body here. It is literally dying right now. Seriously, literally dying as we speak.
And Nicola Coughlin playing on Bridgerton.
And BMI.
Yes.
That doesn't equate health is during the Olympics, Alana Maher.
I love that woman so much.
I love her so much. And
I want to marry her.
Definitely I'm doing a rugby player in the future.
Yes!
Right, definitely. And mostly because of
make her a lesbian or bi, because I would marry Alona.
Yeah, if she I know. I would marry Alona bar too.
I am completely straight, but I get it.
But I would still, yeah.
Sexy.
Yeah.
So recently she had a statement about her BMI, about how she's
We had commented on one of her Instagram posts, and so she did a reply, and they're like, well, what is your BMI, 30? And she's like,
It's 33, actually.
Yeah.
Guess what,
it's
though?
Not a representation of your health.
Thigh, and it's like this muscle, and you're like, I love you
so much. I literally saw a video
crush my
of her.
Skull with your thighs. Would you please?
I literally saw a video of her like powering through a run in her team in England. And I sent it to Molly and was like, I want her thighs wrapped around me completely straight. I just want to feel it. I want to feel it. Yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Thighs make great earmuffs.
Yeah, girl. They do. Mm. Alona? For realsies. I'm doing an Alona Mar-ish character.
Well, that's awesome because there's a new
like a
rugby
Taylor Swift-esque
women's rugby
love interest for me. That'd be great.
There's a new women's rugby league in the U.S. It's the first ever professional, so this is a good time to do it. Yeah.
All I'm saying is if you take that idea, thank me.
I'll see what I can do. I can't tell you anything because I love keeping secrets so much.
Me too.
Okay, but after we start filming, if you want to tell us things, you can. We won't tell. We're very good secret keepers. We know a lot of author secrets.
A lot of author secrets.
They're always like, I can't tell
you
this.
Look me in the eyes. So I got a lot of secrets.
Like, I love keeping secrets. My one of my very favorite things of the success of the Cocky Kingman series is I don't tell people what the titles are in advance, but I'll put up like my little dummy cover on Amazon so people can pre-order the next book with just the initials.
Yes.
And people's guesses of what the titles are going to be is my very, very favorite part. For the Anaconda Downstairs, I did a whole post of people's wrong guesses because they were so funny. It's my favorite.
You're going to start leaving Easter eggs at, like in your stuff for everyone?
Yeah.
Just doing Easter eggs all the time?
All the time. All the time.
Love it. All right, so I want to talk a moment about witty banter, because we have already talked about it, but let's talk a little bit more. So for me, the thing that absolutely ruins a sex scene, like I said, is terrible bedroom banter. I can't with it. Chris
baby,
and Trixie
baby.
They're so pretty, baby. No. Chris and Trixie do not have that problem. From page one of their friendship, words are hard. So their friendship is deeply blanketed in flirtation. Like, they're friends. He's okay with that boundary, but they still flirt with each other, whether they think they are or not. Do you have a process for writing the banter both in and out of the bedroom?
So I'm very much one of those writers that it's a movie in my head. So part of it, I just let it flow and see what comes out. And then I go back and literally what I said earlier, I literally just read it and I go, wait, is that funny? Is that funny? And then I just play around with it until I think it's funny.
Listen, I have read some scenes, not by you, again, this author that I'm not going to name. And I'm like, is that what you want your husband to say to you? Like, is that, that's what you want? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this how you talk in real life?
Very specifically in my sex scenes, I try really hard to make them very individual to that couple. Like, I could never, like, basically, like, copy and paste a sex scene because they're very individual to those people in my head.
Yeah.
As it is.
Because our book characters are real people.
Right, because I treat them like my characters are real people. But also,
because they're my invisible friends up here.
Yes, they very much are. Like, they definitely whisper in my ears what they want to say. But also, I want the sex scenes to be realistic, too. I mean, there are some things that fat bodies don't do the same as thin bodies. And so it's important for me to for those sex scenes to be, they could actually do that. And so if I'm making it realistic in that way, it should be realistic in all ways, including banter.
Yes, thank you also for that, because I sometimes text Katie and I'm like, explain to me how this position would work. And I'm just waiting for her to nurse, like, to medical side it. And a lot of times she's like, I don't fucking know. You're like, that's not,
that is my new favorite trend on TikTok right now, is people attempting positions on, like, okay, have you seen the Megan Thee Stallion has a new song out, right? Yeah. And it's like one leg on the headboard, my head between the legs, watching that shit like you're a porno star. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, you have a leg on the headboard and one on the bed? You have,
Megan.
you're watching between the legs? How are you watching between the legs, Megan? I'm flexible. I'm not that flexible, bitch.
For me, it's all the people trying to figure out how the Onyx Storm scene between Zayden and Violet.
Oh, the knee one? On the
throne. And I'm like, yeah. How did he...
Yeah, good times. There's another trend that I hope goes viral, because it's people drawing stick figures of the characters.
Yes! Like,
please, everybody draw the stick figures. I had a book one time that it was why choose one girl, four guys.
Oh, boy.
Good times. It's a Nutcracker retelling. I'm just saying.
too, like, many penises.
there were a lot. So a girl that is in my Facebook group messaged. She's like, okay, look, I'm reading this scene, and you said this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and I just can't figure it out in my head. And so I literally sat down with a marker and drew it out, and I was like, oh, my God, you're right. That, he's backwards.
Oh, my God. I fucked up. I'm so sorry. Thank you for doing the research. I'll fix it in the next draft. Do you want a redaction? Do you want an apology? What, lady?
So, speaking of the bedroom, Trixie and Chris,
yes,
they have some very hot sex scenes. By the way, that post that you posted of, like, the blurred out image of the shit.
I got in trouble for that on Instagram.
You did? Oh, yeah.
Instagram took it down.
You know, let men hang balls all they want on Instagram.
I know. Like, I had chicken.
Keep hanging brain, guys.
I mean, you can see
no one here. And fuck me.
Do these scenes come easily to you to write, or how do you work your way through those scenes as an author?
No, the sex scenes have always come fairly easily to me. I like sexy times in books, so I read plenty of them. Maybe I watch a little corn to help get ideas. I mean,
check, no judgment.
It's a good place to find.
If you find something that explains Megan Thee Stallion's position, let us know.
No, I mean, in general, because again, for me,
please don't post it on the internet. No, you'll get in trouble. Private messages. For me,
because they are real individuals in my head. It's just the progression of what I think would actually, how it would happen.
Yeah. You have a full cycle of relationships in your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I get it when people say they're hard to write. They're not for me. It just, that's what they're doing. They're just doing that in my head, and now I have to write it down.
Here's the problem with me for sex scenes. I get embarrassed.
Oh, yeah.
I am not a person that gets embarrassed, and I get embarrassed. That's the only time I'm like, oh, Molly, you're so bad.
The only time, this is super funny. So I knocked that out of myself really early on.
See, I'm turning red now thinking about it.
I would write sex scenes at Starbucks. So I knew there were people around me, and so I had to not be embarrassed about what I was writing. Like, I literally, like, worked it out of myself, right?
I'm going to do that. I'm going to take myself out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, try it. Because, like, you know people are going to be like, what is she writing, right?
And I'm, like, pink.
Right. The only – and this is super funny. Are you okay, the only time I get squidgy about it is when – I talk to some of my fans and they're like friends, and then they're reading, and I was like, oh no, now you are in my sexy times head. That's weird.
Okay, so I can relate to that.
I don't know anybody.
I can relate to that because, so I'm a children's librarian, yeah. And I run a Cub Scout pack in our very small town in coastal Virginia.
Yep.
And we live in a very, very small town, okay? And people have found our podcast. Yeah. And of course, we talk a lot about sex in books on here, but we talk a lot about my personal sex life with my husband.
Yeah.
Partly because, you know, it's good and I brag about it, but also because it's kind of funny to have him editing it, you know, while we're talking about
it. You literally tell people that like, oh, it's how you pay him for this.
Oh, she liked that.
But it is really awkward when they start, when other people start listening and I'm like, ooh, now you know.
I pretend I don't know you.
Right. So it does get a little weird. So I totally get that.
I thought you were going to bring up the fact that you've better read sex scenes for me and has been like, I think this is like watching you and Matt go at it.
No, I don't. Listen, I just have to try to pretend that that's not what's happening because I just don't want to be in the Biggs bedroom. Like, I just don't. It's not for me. It's not for me.
It's a no for me, dog. It's a no for me.
All right. So I want to talk about virginity for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they were going to say it's Virginia. I was like, who's Virginia?
We don't need to talk about Virginia. Character? So we've had several conversations on Book Besties about virginity being an archaic social construct. With Trixie also talks about this in this book. Trixie is a PNV virgin, but she isn't completely innocent sexually.
Right.
Can you talk about your decision to make her a quote-unquote virgin in this book? And given the fact that she's lacking in a full sexual experience, what made you come up with the decision that they wouldn't wait longer? Because they jump into bed really quickly.
There was a couple of things when I decided I wanted to do this. I think, again, part of it was about representation. I think, especially with curvy girls, there are a lot of later in life virgins that want to see that that's okay, that you can be, that you can be a later in life virgin and still have a great sexual experience.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But I also agree with Trixie that virginity is a social construct.
100%.
Trixie got some special upbringing. So that she
seriously,
that she does have, I think, different views on sexuality than the majority of people. But a lot of my choice to make Trixie a virgin was because of I wanted later in life representation of a virgin heroine that still had great sexy times.
Yeah.
Thank you for not leaning into the virgin trope either.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my maidenhood. Oh, I can't. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
It means it was special.
Yeah.
So
important to me to not have that because I know how many later in life virgins there are out there. I get letters from them that say, I'm 50 years old and I'm a later in life virgin. I've never had sex and your books helped me with that.
Yeah.
Because it's not represented.
Yeah. I mean, so for me, and this is something we've talked about on the podcast, I'm not ashamed of it at all. I grew up in church in youth group in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so I still do believe this. I do think virginity is something to value. But I was a virgin until I met my husband. He's the only man I've ever been with. And we met when I was 27 and were married when I was 28. Now, we did not wait till marriage to have sex because that man, that ass, though. I mean, he got. So I gave right in. Not right away, but, you know, we did wait for a little bit.
You get the point.
But, yeah. But I do feel like this is a random character, but Amy Farrah Fowler on Big Bang Theory, seeing her and then hearing Maya Bialik talk about how she was a later in life virgin and how that was really important to her to see that representation on TV. Like it was empowering. I do feel like 90s youth group had a lot of religious trauma, like the virginity pledges and the way that women are treated in youth group and how men are, you know, we can't show our shoulders because God forbid we cause our brothers to stumble. You know what? Fucking tell them to put shirts on then. Okay. Why can't I wear a two piece that's covering more than a one piece? Like, come on, this is fucking ridiculous. But, I'll get off that soapbox, but to see,
I'll get back on it if you want.
To see somebody who she grew up without that. She grew up in an environment where this was encouraged and, you know, exploration of her sexuality was encouraged. Although I'll tell you what, if my mother ever sent me a vibrator in the mail, hell no. Hell no. I'd be like,
I mean, Tracy's mom is something very special. I mean, while I want to have people that are real and representative, I don't know that Trixie's mom actually exists anywhere in the world. But I
don't know.
So
my girls find me pretty fucking embarrassing 24/7.
I wish Trixie's mom existed because we need more sex positive people in the world like Trixie's mom. But she doesn't exist. But I love her so much.
If you know a plus size retired porn star who is now doing social media,
let us know.
Send us a link so we can thank her for her work. Okay, moving on.
Speaking of Trixie's mom, she plays a big part in this book, but as a background character. Her history as and past as an adult film star really plays a big part in why Trixie is Trixie. Mm-hmm. What brought this part of the story to you? Like, what was this?
I mean, a big part of it was when I knew that I wanted to do later in life Virgin for Trixie, I needed a better reason than I'm saving it.
Yeah.
I didn't want that, but I also didn't want it to be a trauma because I do fluff. I don't do trauma. Right. I do fluff. Right.
I'm not making you cry. God damn it.
Yeah.
She says.
Like I cry at touching Super Bowl commercials and
same
think that I don't want to cry in my romance books. I get it for people that do. That's not what I write. So I needed a better reason for Trixie to be a later in life virgin. And I was like, but why? Yeah. But why would she be a later in life virgin? And I was like, what if?
I mean, that is a little bit traumatic for mom being a porn star.
So I mean, there's definitely some trauma there. But not
trauma,
right? We all have a little bit of trauma from our parents, no matter what, even if they were amazing. And Trixie's parents are amazing. But also there's some trauma of that. And so I went with it. I was like, what would happen if your mom was a corn star? That would be weird. And
this is what would happen.
Poor Trixie.
I have to say, I'm circling back here a second because you mentioned the reason for writing Trixie the way that you did. I'm glad that you made her somebody that had relationships and had still been desired and that someone wanted to have a sexual relationship. Cause I think that the misconception is that when you are a later in life virgin, that it's just been like, especially if you're a big woman like I am, well, nobody wanted you. Well, that's just not the case. Like, I'm not trying to say that all the men want me. Like, I'm not saying that, but I definitely dated people who were interested in that. Yeah. I wasn't because I was dealing with the whole, you know, religious trauma but when Tom and I met, he knew I was a virgin. We met through eHarmony. This is not sponsored, but we did meet that way.
Hashtag.
And I told him before we met because he was like proposing all of these first date locations that were all like really expensive and like great date places, but I was like, there are going to be zero expectations and he needs to know that because I'm not sleeping with him. And also he was just supposed to be a free dinner and that motherfucker and I have been married for 15 years, so I don't know, here we are.
I mean, we got two kids for a weekend and he never went away, so I can't say shit.
It happens.
Literally. But I'm waiting for him to leave. He's just still here.
Yeah. But I have found myself having to explain that to people before. It's not because nobody wanted me. It's because I didn't want that in my life yet. Mm-hmm. And that's Trixie's thing too. The people that she's with.
I think it circles back again to in media. Mm-hmm. People do not see fat women as sexual beings at all.
Right. Right.
It's the same thing. She always was. Always.
Right. Right.
Because we all have a libido.
Yeah, because everybody got a libido.
Yeah. Seriously. All right. So completely transitioning here. So you are an indie published author and you write under the pen name of Amy Award and also Addie Award. Is that how
Amy. Like, remember.
80, like the number.
80. All right,
so can you explain the difference to us, the two personas? I know you kind of have already, but like really dive into that.
So 80 award is mostly 99% paranormal romance, mostly shifters. So my, the big series, I have two big series under 80. Like I have a lot of books under 80. 80 has written 50-ish books.
Damn, atta girl.
Yeah, 80's been writing for a long time. Published for my 11-year publishing. Publiversary is coming up for 80.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and it's been a lot of fun. So two big series that 80 writes. My first big series is called Dragons Love Curves. And all of the heroes are dragon shifters. Very fun. Very delicious. I had a lot of fun with that. And it was really kind of my first big break out in indie publishing. And I think, again, it was curvy girls, but it was also dragons, and it was just the right time for shifting.
Yeah.
And then I have a spinoff series of that called Alpha Wolves Want Curves. And that is curvy girls and wolf shifters. And then everything in 80s world is all interconnected somehow. Like it's all just one. I call it the 80-verse. So everything is all just interconnected in some way. I would say for people who want to start, if it's important to you to read in order, because I know it's not for everybody, but if it's important to you to read in order, I would start with Dirty Wolf, which is the first book in the Wolf series, because technically it happens
before
the dragons.
That man has more abs than should exist.
Yeah. Well, he is a wolf shifter, so they get extra abs.
So half of his abs are wolf abs.
Yeah, half of them are wolf abs. I will give an extra plug. She's a librarian.
Yes.
Sold. I have a thing. I like nerdy, bookish girls and hot guys. Gala's also
trope.
A librarian. It's her first year as a librarian. She's fresh back from her getting her MLIS and had to move back home, as one does after university.
Because it's expensive to be alive. Because
it's expensive to be alive, especially when you had to get a master's degree for a job that pays this much money.
Don't I know it.
So that one, but also because you know, we already said, I already told you, I have always wanted to write football players. I also have a spin-off series of that where it's football players in college football players, and they're also werewolves. That is called Big Wolf on Campus. Those are novellas, but they're all the very familiar. Like, I would say if you are almost always only a contemporary reader and you've never really touched on paranormal, you haven't really read wolf shifters before, but you want to try a little bit of wolf spot, I would try that series because it's the very familiar contemporary type of tropes are in that one. Like I have older brother's best friend, I have friends to lovers, I have all of those. And they're college football players who are also werewolves.
Oh no, I'm currently reading a werewolf paranormal romance series right now.
I love me some wolf spot. It's some good stuff.
I mean, you know, if you ever read Twilight, you will like paranormal romance. It's Twilight, but they be fucking been
Team Jacob. I just want to tell you that right now.
All right, you're gonna have to ask our Twilight question at the end now.
I will.
Okay.
I am not Team Jacob. I am Team Edward. But reading Midnight Sun made me like, who the fuck is this creepy ass motherfucker? Like, this is not.
Isn't my Edward.
Honestly, in my 40s, I'm Team Charlie and Team Carlisle.
I mean, Team Charlie.
They can get it. They can get
delicious.
It.
Delicious. I love me a zaddy.
Right. All right. Oh, but Robert Pattinson or Taylor Lautner? Taylor Lautner. Although Taylor Lautner,
all day, every day, twice on Sundays.
He's a grown-up now.
I know!
He's a grown-up now, but he was not...
I remember when he was Shark Boy and 10 years old. So
Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
All right. So also I want to talk about the publishing industry because we have talked a little bit about this here. And you consider yourself an indie author, but in the library world, we would call you self-published. And you and I had like an off pod conversation about this because I wanted to make sure
the audacity.
Fuck you. I wanted to make sure that I got the verbiage right.
Yeah.
So both of these differ from what is considered traditionally published.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could explain this breakdown to our listeners, because I found what you said very insightful. Mm-hmm. And also, where can readers find your books?
Yeah.
Because we know that we want to plug that.
I don't remember what I said, but here's my feelings about it. So there is self-publishing, and self-publishing has been an amazing advent because it means so many more people could actually publish books because there's not the gatekeepers of publishing anymore, of traditional. So anybody can self-publish a book now. But I think for me, in my head, the difference between a self-published author, and there's no just about it because it's hard to be a self-published author, but the difference between a self-published author and an indie author is becoming your own business. So I'm an indie author because I am my own publisher. I have a publishing house. I own Coffee Break Publishing, and Coffee Break Publishing publishes all of my books, and I have to do all of the marketing. I have to hire the editors. I have to hire the cover designer. I have to do all of this work that a publisher is the one that normally would do that.
Right.
But I have to do all of that. And anybody who self-publishes has to do that. But I have done that for approximately 60 books.
That's wild.
So anybody who basically, if you're out there and you're writing more than a book that you just wanted to self-publish because you just wanted somebody to read your books, which is great. I love that. I want there to be more hobby authors who get to publish their books, which is why self-publishing is amazing. But this is a business to me.
Right.
You know, I am an indie author.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And there are, one of the things that you had said in our message was that there are indie publishing houses.
Oh, yeah.
Those do exist. And actually, next season, we already know of an author coming on next season who is indie author published through an indie author house, indie publishing house. So that exists too. But I feel like the self-publishing, indie publishing industry has shifted a lot with things like Kindle Unlimited and Amazon really accepting these independently published authors and selling their work on their platform. Because even my husband has written a book that is available on Kindle.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't even read it. So I'm not like saying you have to read it. Like, I haven't even read it, but, listen, if he, the day that he
You're
reads,
telling me Tom was published before I was?
But I mean, it's because you won't actually finish a book and put
it out
there.
It's not that I can't. It's the ADHD. And the last
Molly, you have to just stick to one.
And also, the last time I completely finished a novel, I had such a massive timeline issue that I put myself in a ball for a long time.
For a long time.
80K. 80K words, Amy. 80K words.
I have not quite forgiven her for the fact that she sent me, it was like 2 or 3 chapters of what was starting to be like a forced proximity, like office romance kind of thing. And it was so fucking good. And I was so ready. And then like a week later, she's like, oh yeah, I'm on a different project now. And she's not on that project anymore either. And over the summer, she started a different project, and now she's two projects away.
Okay, listen, I'm going to give a teeny tiny bit of advice to all authors in this next little bit.
Do it.
You might try getting in touch with, it's called the Better Faster Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Becca Syme makes you take your Clifton Strengths test, and then she tells you you're not doing it wrong. But you need to quit doing these particular things.
Oh, I have a degree in creative writing. I literally went to school for it.
Oh, no.
Yes.
This is so the opposite of that. Because what this does is instead of teaching you how to write, it teaches you how to brain.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, so her course is called Write Better Faster. But she doesn't actually teach you how to write or write better or write faster. She teaches you how to be the most you can be. This. And that is the real path to success.
I'll put the links in the deli. Yeah.
She's got a really great podcast that is called The Quit Cast, because she's going to teach you how to quit doing the things that don't serve you, but are almost always the advice that the whole world tells you when you have to be a writer. Like, for example, if you're a writer, you write every day. No, I don't.
No, you don't.
But I'm a pretty successful writer.
Mm-hmm.
So she helps you with those kinds of things. She's got a really great book called Dear Writer, You Need to Quit. She's not telling you to quit being a writer. She's telling you to quit doing the things that don't serve you.
My favorite book like that is Bird by Bird.
Oh, yeah. Delicious. Have you read that? Yes.
So good. It really helps you take a minute and step back.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're not doing it doesn't mean you're not doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Honestly, that being involved in Becca Syme's whole world is the only reason I'm still writing. I burn out really hard about 40 books into AD's career because I was pushing myself so hard and following all of the advice that's out there.
That everybody had.
And I burn out so hard. I hired one of the coaches from Better Faster Academy to sit on me 3 times a day because I had to finish a book and I could not make myself write. And so she called me 3 times a day and said, okay, what is the next word? What is the next thing that you can put on the page so that I could finish it? And I would not still be writing if I hadn't started getting coaching with the BFA, because
thank you for your honesty.
Really, Becca Syme, it really, really, really has helped me embrace the most authentic me. And I do actually think it's part of the success of the Cocky Kingmans, because I have put so much of my authentic self into this series.
I love this
so
much.
The more I have found, and I actually had this conversation with Becca, the more I am authentic, the more successful I have become. But it's because Becca helped me learn how to be the most authentic me that I could be.
I'm actually seeing that in this project now. I struggle with identifying myself because one of the big things I got out of school was you need to know who you are before you become a writer.
Oh,
are you romance? Are you this? Are you this? And so I bebop from genres.
Yeah.
It's just who I've always been. And I'm just writing for me and I'm writing what interests me right now. And what interests me right now is the thought of reality TV in the future.
Yes. So fun. So fun. Do it. So fun.
Like,
it sounds like a really good idea. She broke it down for me and I was like, yes,
I can tell you about it later. This is not a pod conversation, right? No. But I can tell you later if you want. Like
So, getting back to the publisher.
Oh, right.
You are your own publisher. Do you have other authors that you publish under your umbrella as well? Well,
it's all me, except for I do co-write that the werewolves in college who play football. I co-write with another author. And I publish those books, but really they're also me because we co-write. So really,
right.
It's all just me. I've never published
multiple authors because it's all your different personalities.
Yes. So if you were to ever, I don't even know if you can go like look up a publisher on Amazon or whatever, but there are 3 or 4 different pen names that are published under Coffee Break Publishing, but they're just me. They're all me.
Have you?
I love your multiple.
That would be an interesting next step to growing.
Yeah.
You know,
I have thought about it before because I do love to help people get published. I have a small group of authors that I mentor that were all just readers of mine who said, I want to write and publish a book. And several of them are multi-published now because I helped them. Yeah, I love helping people publish because it's a dream for so many people to write and publish a book. And it was not accessible for such a long time because of trad
publishing. Right.
So I love to help people get published. I think more likely, instead of publishing people myself, though, I think because of the success of this series, I want to be able to give back. And I do, I like give to charities and stuff. Like all of my books, I always say in the back, a portion of this proceeds will go to such and such a charity. But I also would like to, and I need to talk to my accountant and help her make me, but I would like to start some sort of a grant for very probably most specifically for BIPOC because they get the shaft so often. For BIPOC authors who want to write a curvy girl book, because I want more curvy girl books in the world. So if I could give somebody a grant so that they could pay for their cover and their audiobook, because it's expensive to do all of that.
It's expensive to write in general.
Yeah.
You have to give up your time.
So more likely, instead of publishing other people myself, I would be happier to give somebody a grant so that they could self-publish and become their own business.
I love this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Women helping women.
Yeah.
All right. So kind of to wrap things up, because we're over time and I want to be respectful of that. I'm sorry about that. Can you tell us what you're working on next? And are there going to be more Cocky Kingman's books?
Yeah, for sure. So my intention is to write all 8 of the siblings.
Even the little sister.
Even the little sister.
Jules's
book will definitely be the last one in the series because I need Jules to grow up first. So that
she's a kid right now.
Can we just keep her a kid for a little bit?
Yeah, we're gonna keep her a kid for a little bit longer because she is the sassy fun. But can you imagine growing up with 7 older brothers? Can you even imagine?
I have 3 younger brothers. So yes, like, I can.
So much. So, I mean, Jules's personality is very fun because of her brothers. My intention is to write all of the Kingman siblings. I will say, and I will get it again, so I'll say it now. I do get asked a lot to write Daddy Kingman's story.
I was gonna ask.
I know. Everybody asks, and the answer is, I don't know. I hadn't intended to write another story for him because he's already had his love. I will say there is a prequel story that you can get for free from me. You just join my newsletter and I give you April and Bridger's prequel story, like how they met. It's called Beard.
Yep, I went ahead and got that.
Beard. Delicious. But also I know that it can make some people sad because a part of Kingman life is that they mostly grew up without a mom. Because April died.
April.
I don't know if I can find another love for Bridger. Does he deserve it? Absolutely. He is the best of us all. But also, I don't know. And I'll have to think about it for a real long time.
And he can be like the grandma that's on TikTok who's like dating in the nursing home. Do you know who I'm talking about?
This is my outfit today. If you don't like it, you can fuck off. Her.
I mean, I watched one last night. She was going on a date at 9 p.m. with a guy in her nursing home.
Like, I get readers messaging me and they're like, I'll be Daddy Kingman's next wife. It'll be fun. In my mind, like, he's this delicious Gen X daddy that, I mean, I love Bridger. I don't know if I can write another book for him. I'm
making a novella. Send him on vacation where he just has a fling.
Maybe. I mean, I can't say that Bridger probably, like, there's no way he hasn't had any sex in the last 12 years.
He's got to get it out of his system. Somehow he's got 8 kids.
So I don't know, but there's definitely all the Kingmans are coming. I am writing the next book in the series.
Look at how many children he's got.
The next book in the series is, I've already announced it, so this part's not the spoiler. It's Flynn Kingman, who is the oldest of the twins. Nice. His story is going to be told. He's in the last semester of college. So we're going to be visiting Denver State University, where everybody got to go to college. And his heroine. I have not revealed the pet or the title yet, so you have fun guessing that. But I'm working on his book right now, and then the book after that, I'm just going to do those two back-to-back. The twins are back-to-back because they're the twins. Got to do everything together. So Flynn is next. His book comes out in June. And then the plan is for Griffin. His book will come out in September. And then I don't have the schedule after that. I don't know after that.
She's like, one day at a time.
Right, one day at a time. I do know, like, in order, it's going to be Flynn, Griffin, Isaac, and then Jules. Because that's who I have left to tell.
Are you still writing as 80 as well?
So I am still writing. Not as much. 80 only released one book last year. But I have only one. It was another book in the Big Wolf on Campus series because football. I do have another 80 release coming up in, I can't remember. It's either March or April. What is time? Either March or April, another book in the Big Wolf on Campus series is coming out. It is called Blue Blood Wolf because he's, remember The Prince and Me, where he's a secret, yeah. He's a prince and he goes and hides.
Yeah. Yeah.
That trope, but also he's a werewolf.
Prince and the Popper. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
So that's coming out, in March or April. I can't remember. And then AD is planning on starting a new series later this year.
Nice. Add a girl.
And we'll see how that goes. Cause honestly, these Kingman books take me a lot of time and energy to write. So 80 fell a little bit by the wayside, but I love the paranormal books. I love them. They're so important to my heart that I want to try to get at least 2 80 books out this year instead of just one.
Yeah.
So you're shooting for 5 books published this year is what I'm hearing?
5, or if I can pull it off, 6. I don't know.
Fuck you, man. Respectfully
well,
and disrespectfully.
80 in her heyday, when I burn out, no, to be fair.
We love you.
I burn out hard when I was doing this, but 80 for about 3 years in a row, 80 wrote 8 to 10 books a year.
That has to break your brain.
It did. Sweetheart. It did break my brain. Honestly, it did break my brain. I was in real bad burnout, and I would not have made it through if I hadn't been getting coaching.
Yeah. No rule. You call me, I yell at you and tell you you're stupid. Slow down.
Trying real hard.
Slow the fuck down. That's all you got to hear in the back of your mind is me just saying slow the fuck down.
I'm going to pull Molly. Why do you write like you're running out of time?
I am known for singing.
Molly sings on our podcast all the time.
A lot.
Well, annoying, actually, Amy, thank you so much for coming on here and talking to us. You are welcome back anytime. Yay, if you want to come on again and we can read one of your paranormals, we're good with anything.
Heck, you could come read another reader's book with us. And...
Yeah. Dirty Wolf.
Dirty Wolf. It's very fun. Werewolf and a librarian.
Love it.
Yeah, it's very fun. I mean, if readers want to just test the waters, because you never know with what you want. All my books, AD and Amy, are all in KU, so that makes it easy. Okay. If you have KU, every single one is there, except for the prequel, the freebies. If you join either of my newsletters, I give you, depending on where you join. If you join Amy's newsletter, you get Bare Naked with the Bearded Baller, which is April and Bridger's prequel. If you join 80's newsletter, I got a lot of freebies for you. I got a werewolf freebie. I got a dragon freebie. I might have a vampire freebie. Links, I can't remember.
We're going to put all your links in the things, guys. Yeah. So you get all the free books.
All the free books you want so you can test me out.
But then go actually read her shit. Don't just take the free stuff and run away, okay?
Right. Read it.
But
read
also, it. I'm hilarious, so go read it.
Yeah. Same.
I think
I'm People don't believe me. I do, too.
I do, too. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. You're welcome back anytime. Before we go, next week we are going to be reading this book. I do not have a physical copy of it, so I read the audiobook, so Tom will put it right here. It is The Fiancé Farce. And I didn't even think about this when we were writing the schedule this year, Molly, but we always do romances in February. And this February we have 2 straight heterosexual romances and 2 queer romances. So we actually are doing more queer representation in February as opposed to just in June because queer people exist all year round.
All year round.
In case you didn't know, welcome. Sorry. They do.
All of the time.
Right here.
Yeah. All of the time they exist. So anyway, thank you again, Amy, for coming on. Yes. And we'll see you next week, besties. Bye. Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly, not those of anyone else. Today's book was The Cock Down the Block by our special guest, Amy Award. Your Book Besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.